Let's get started here. It is 3 p.m. on.
She's got it on her business card.
The 6th? Today the 6th?
Yes.
August 6th at 3 p.m.
September.
September 6th at 3 p.m. We're gathering the Board of County Commissioners conference room for a, I guess this is just kind of a.
Briefing.
Briefing on the smart meters. Pacific Power Light Smart Meters, President Commissioner Morgan, Commissioner Aaron, Commissioner DeYoung. And if you'd go around the table and introduce yourselves for the microphone, we sure appreciate it. And then we'll get started. I want to remind everybody, this is not a back and forth. You are here as observers and listeners, and you can, you know, we will have it recorded, so you can pick that up at a later date. Or if you're welcome to record it yourself if you'd like, so you have it right away. But, okay, let's get started.
Hi, I'm Melissa Nottingham, and I'm a manager of customer advocacy and tariff policy with Pacific Power.
What was your name again?
Melissa Nottingham.
Thank you, Melissa. Sorry, I caught the rest of it, and then.
It's a long name.
Corey Esslund, official title is manager of field support. In this role, I am responsible for the meter qualification and meter deployment of smart meters in Oregon and California.
Christina Kruger, regional business manager for Pacific Power, representing Jackson and Josephine County as the community liaison, government affairs representative, as well as the manager that oversees the foundation and community funding support.
That's a long
Welcome.
Title.
She's got a lot.
I've been fed.
She beats me.
She was the wilting flower earlier before
I
she
was.
Had a sandwich. So.
Okay, well, I guess we just start with whichever one you, I think you gave a presentation last night to
the council.
The City of Grants Pass. So I'm going to move down to the other end of the table so I can see the PowerPoint.
Okay.
But can you see that? Can all of you see that?
So if you don't mind, I'd like to really kick it off. The reason why we're here is we really want to kind of bring everybody up to speed on where we are with the project itself with respect to Josephine County, and then of course provide some backgrounder if you feel like you would like us to review the process of where we landed to the approval of the actual project to happen, and then also give you opportunity to ask us questions, because we understand that you've been under quite a bit of pressure just from your constituents that have maybe some fears or concerns around the technology and or costs associated, and perhaps even some equity questions. So we want to make sure we address that for you. In addition to that, we really want to make sure that everyone understands that part of what we're doing by going out in the community and giving these presentations is collecting feedback, because we do see that if we want to be here another 100 years, that we have to take that feedback and we have to learn how we can change and adjust in order to meet the demands of our customers in the future, right? So this is definitely a listening tour as well. And so with that, the reason why I have these folks with me here is because they're really going to be able to help answer any questions, particularly around the regulatory environment, what the rules and maybe restrictions or what the parameters are around how we operate and accomplish some of the things that we do, as well as, you know, the logistical aspects and technical aspects associated with the technology. So as a backgrounder, I'm going to go ahead and prompt Melissa to kind of go through the timing and give you kind of an overview of how we came to today. So.
Okay, and just for a little more detail on what I do, I deal with escalated customer issues. I work directly with the Oregon Public Utility Commission on consumer complaints. And I also work on the rules, which is how we do business, and also the Schedule 300, which is our fees, which is one of the issues that has come up and surrounding the opt-out option. Yeah, so that's why I'm here. But just to give you a little background on when this started, all investor-owned utilities have been required to submit a smart grid report for the last few years. In 2016, we introduced the that we were going to be installing AMI meters throughout our service territory in Oregon. So that's where the first business case came through. We held some informal workshops with commission staff, consumer staff, Citizen Utilities Board, CAPO, other consumer groups a couple times, and once in 2016, and then finally in December 13th of 2017.
Where did you have those workshops?
Those workshops were in Portland, and there was one in Salem. Yeah. So, in August, I mean, January 4th, 2017, we filed for our tariff changes to allow customers to opt out. It was very important for us to have that opt-out option available to customers prior to installing the first meter. So those fees were approved on March 23rd as part of an order 1701. And then on January 8th, we began installing smart meters in the Willamette Valley. Approximately 600,000 meters we will be installing throughout Oregon. As of September 4th, we currently have...
What's your total meter count in Oregon? Just, you say you're going to put in 600,000 meters.
That's right.
How many meters do you have total?
That's all.
That's about it.
That's all
we're going to do primarily. I mean, there's going to be some large industrials and a few other ones that we won't install for various reasons.
Metering.
But we're going to install
The
vast majority of meters in Oregon.
Currently, like I said, we have about 234,677 smart meters installed in the state. We've received notification statewide from 1990 customers who are electing to opt out, which represents about 0.85% of our installed meters and about 0.3% of our overall meters. And as the installation, I'll let you talk about the installation process.
I'd love to.
We are going to be starting installing meters.
Actually started in Josephine County.
It just started.
So yeah, we started in the Willamette Valley. We've completed there. We completed Klamath Falls. We're currently in Jackson County. Mm-hmm. We're targeting for completion in Jackson County substantially by the 17th of this month, and then beginning in Gold Hill and working our way through Josephine County, September, October, worst case scenario, wrapping up in very early November for installations.
When were we starting Williams? Because that's Josephine County.
Yeah, we're the 17th, I think, is that week, as we're targeting there. But we're completing all of Jackson County first before we roll in. We're trying to
move up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a little bit of the background, the timing, and where our scheduling is here. I'm going to let you talk about the
tech.
You're the tech guy.
Me?
Yeah.
Sure. So there's over 70 million smart meters installed across the U.S. We purposely waited. Portland General, for example, that area, they deployed smart meters in 2009, 2010. We purposely waited for the technology to, one, mature and cost to come down. And so we've, from a technology standpoint, the meters themselves meet and exceed ANSI standards. ANSI is the American National Standards Institute. They formed the standards for metering performance. And so we're meeting and exceeding those standards. We went through additional certification for UL testing. So the meters actually went through Underwriter Laboratories. If you've heard of them, they're kind of the standards laboratory. On the back of that monitor, there's a little UL stamp. They basically certify manufacturing process, and then another set of eyes making sure that the product meets its industry standards. And so we went through UL's testing for these meters as well.
The first meters you put in, and it says new meters outperform standards.
Yeah.
Do you have to go back and replace the meters you put in 2009?
Well, we didn't. That was Portland General.
Yeah, okay.
So PGE did the 2009 thing. We wanted to wait.
Really
they were the ones. They were the ones cutting trail on smart meters,
yeah,
especially in Oregon. So we wanted to really sit back and wait, let technology mature, let prices come down. There was a bunch of vendors at that time in the smart meter space. Let that kind of new technology shake out, and so that's when we kind of then decided to come into the game, fairly late. And then, so new meters outperform standards, meaning that the meters, when we test them against those ANSI standards, they meet or exceed almost every ANSI standard from a performance and accuracy standpoint. And then, advancements in communication and data encryption. Some of the very first generations of smart meters, there were some issues around that. Data security wasn't thought of in 2008, 2009 as a serious issue. Today, it absolutely is. And so data encryption, every piece of data that goes across a smart meter network is encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
Data security and cybersecurity is very important to us. So we actually hired some consultants to make sure that as we design our smart meter system, as it integrates with, because we're purchasing a product from Itron as the vendor, that they've developed a secure system, and then it's actually integrating with our, with Pacific Power systems as securely as possible. And then we actually hired another contractor to what's called penetration test our network. So they basically tested our security. How secure is this? Can we hack in? Can we steal data off of it? And we passed all of our initial our penetration tests. So we're trying to be as secure as we possibly can as we develop this and deploy this new technology to our customers. Let's see. And then one thing, you know, there's the meters themselves actually have a sensor inside to check heat. So one of the concerns around smart meters is the risk of fire. And really when that would occur is if at the time of meter exchange. So today you have a meter base on the side of your house that you own, that's customer property, that our meter is inserted into. And that meter was inserted in there, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. When we go remove our meter, there's a chance that your equipment's gonna fail. And so our installers do an investigation. They do, you know, they do an initial analysis of the site. Is it safe to operate? And remove the existing meter. Once they remove the meter, they actually check the insides of your meter base. Are there indications that it's going to fail? Are there, you know, because we've pulled meter bases out and there's bees inside, there's snakes, there's rats, there's all kinds of stuff. Because it's outside, it's on the side of the house, so there's out by the orchards and stuff. That's what happens. And so, you know, we're doing that investigation. And then one of the functions of the meter is once we do that and we determine that it's safe to install the smart meter has a heat sensor inside that if for some reason there is a failure in the meter base, that you know, that failure is going to be a gap, there's going to be resistance, there's going to be heat buildup. Because of that, the smart meter can alert us if that condition exists. So another kind of safety feature of the smart
meter. Does the meter shut itself down at that time?
No, that wouldn't do any good because the we're still delivering power into it. And so if there is, the threshold for the alarm is set well before there have been any sort of failure. Yeah. Now we've had customer meter bases fail during install. That doesn't mean a fire exists. That means that the meter base itself falls apart and we work with local electricians and our employees to make repairs to the customer property and then install a smart meter. So just because a meter base fails doesn't mean that there's a fire and bad things have happened. It just means that we need to, you know, new jaws in the meter need to be replaced, or an electrician comes out and installs a new meter box and we put a smart meter in.
And does the customer pay that price or do you cover
during the
that?
Project we've actually got that covered.
Yeah,
we're coordinating that entire process.
They would pay.
Yeah, during regular business that would the customer would bear that. It's their property.
Mm-hmm.
But during the project we've actually designed it in a way that we're actually covering that cost.
Yeah.
And coordinating the repair with the electrician, minimizing the impact to customers in that rare occurrence as much as possible. We've had, I think to date, around 600 of those across the 230,000 meters that we've installed.
So I don't know if you
recall. A number of those are in like the coastal areas. We've already done Lincoln City and that whole area. And so a fair bit of corrosion, a fair bit of stuff where folks have painted over meter bases, you can't really tell, then you go touch it and it all falls apart. So that's been kind of the from a meter base and fire kind of safety issue is an important one for us. And I think I rambled quite a bit about the technology.
All right, then I'll go into the benefit to customers. So one of the advantages of having a smart meter on your home is we're really giving customers more information to control their energy usage. Now we're measuring in the past, you know, we provide a product that you can't see. We read the meter one every 30 days. You get a bill, and you know, and you have no way of knowing when that power was used during that time frame, right? So, the advantage of the smart meter is that we take more reads on that meter throughout the day. For a typical residential customer, we would be taking a read every hour. So,
why is that a benefit to the customer versus?
Because if I have a 30-day timeline that I'm trying to identify when my usage peaked, instead of guessing sometime over 30 days, you can drill down and you could say, my power went up on Tuesday at 2 p.m. So at that point, then you can evaluate what was going on in my house on Tuesday at 2 p.m. that drove my power up. So for example, we've had customers who have utilized this technology in order to see, you know, why is my bill so high? And then they look at their usage and they have fairly high usage throughout the day. And they realize they had left their air conditioner on. They didn't turn it off when they went to work. So then they turn the air conditioner on. The next day they can go in and they can see, oh, I can see where my power dropped during the day when I was running my air conditioner. So it gives them more information to manage their costs.
It's as simple as, you remember a couple of years ago, we had a massive winter storm.
Yeah, everybody's bills doubled.
About high bills. Now, if you're in there and you know that you're using your heater at this rate and you look at it and you say, well, yesterday, geez, I was just blowing up my KW, my usage, then you can make an adjustment and see if you actually are going to see some results and save some money.
Except in our community, we had homes without power up to 2 weeks and their bills were double.
Yeah.
So to say that half of the usage yet created twice the bill, it didn't.
And that's where we would find out. So every piece of equipment during that scenario is actually running and having to use more energy in order to work. So
right, because you'd exactly be able to pinpoint where,
yeah, we would
where
be able to have
were.
Customers take a look at their actual information and say, okay, here's some deductive reasoning happening. Here's what's happening in my home, because we don't know. Mm-hmm. When someone calls us and they want us to give them an explanation as to how they basically spent their energy, that's a shot in the dark for us. We have no idea what they have in their home. We have no idea how they're using it or any of that.
And before smart meters, we wouldn't be able to tell you when. We would just go in the last 3 days, you used 1,000 kilowatts.
Yeah,
with smart meters, we can go, well, we know you can go look on your secure CivicCorps login and see, hey, I see I'm using power in the morning from 6 to 2. And there's a little, you can look at that detail by hour of when you're actually using power.
So there's a theory that by having these ever monitor how much usage is going on, that it's actually monitoring what appliances people are using, and therefore the ability to weed out and tell people, no, you can't use that, or we'll shut you off.
No,
not possible. The technology can
not
only
our
measure,
technology.
They can only measure whole home energy usage. So the meter goes on the meter base on the side of your house. That's where the measurement stops. I know what you're pulling into your house, how much you're actually using, what you're using it on, whether it's a dozen hot tubs or whatever else you're doing at home, I have no visibility into. The meters don't have the capability to measure anything else or the technology to measure anything else in the home, just whole home energy usage.
Nor do we want to. We don't have any constraints here. I mean, the majority of our new energy needs for our customers for new builds are already being met through energy efficiency. So we don't have any resource problems. We don't have any energy demand issues. So there's really no benefit.
But from the privacy standpoint, though, it's whole home energy usage. I know, I you know, with a smart meter in a residence, by hour, how much power you're using, on what, no idea, no visibility. Mm-hmm.
Can you shut my power off at will through that meter? Can you call the meter from your location?
Yeah, and that was one of the others.
You have to pay your bill, shut it off?
Yeah, we can do remote reconnects and disconnects without having to roll a truck. So, for example, if someone is disconnected for non-payment, or you move into a home and you're signing up for service and the power's off, you can call. We can turn the power back on in a matter of minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and another question is, because you're checking every hour, is there down the road potential to say our grid is not probably what it should be, I mean what it could be? So when we get to a brownout situation and we say we're going to have to encourage you or give you incentive to not use power during certain parts of the day, can you say, well, you didn't follow along with that, so during those peak hours and your meter used, it's not using 10 kilowatt hours, it's all of a sudden doing 20 kilowatt hours, and we want you to be at 10. And so from 10 to 20, we're going to charge you X number of dollars. Like, you use more water, when you start using more water, they don't encourage you to do that. They penalize you for using
demand charges,
more power or more water. Can you do that with a system of checking it every hour and say, between 2 and 3,
We're operating a transmission grid over 6 states, so we're not that granular on individual usage.
Right.
But just as far as what you're talking about, because I have heard a lot about mandatory time of use type of rate schedules, And
not necessarily here, but it is
in other places. Like, for example, Hawaii, they have smart meters. They have a mandatory time of use. They pay over 50 cents per kilowatt hour, and they have some serious delivery problems on their energy. Here in Oregon, we pay 9 to 11 cents per kilowatt hour, and we do not have that those constraints on delivering our power to our customers. So there is no incentive for us to have any kind of mandatory time of use program.
I'm talking about capability. Does this meter have the capability to do that?
We have the data, and if there was some sort of, if we were to work the Utility Commission for a load control program, if you wanted to volunteer to, or whatever that would look like in the future, the technology is available, yes.
Yeah. Well, one of the, you know, there might be a development. We have optional time of use rates now, and the data may be useful for people who want to participate in optional time of use, because they'll be able to see when they're using the power, shift their load to the time with the lowest price per kilowatt hour. So that's in the future, all of that, but that's not anything we intend, any kind of demand side management programs. Okay. So also one of the other things is faster, more efficient outage restoration. When the meters go out, they'll ping and let us know that the power's off. So we'll be
able. Deal.
Right now or in the future?
With
they
smart
don't
meters.
Ping right now.
No, the existing meters do not do that. Smart meters, when they lose power, they're going to send us basically what's called a last gasp message. I lost power. We'll collect that. We're going to know size and scope of outage significantly faster than we do today. Because today, unless it's a very large outage, we rely on customers calling us.
We had one Friday.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Cave Junction to, I don't know how far.
Well, we certainly learned about that one, right? That was a fire-related and a very large.
And transmission scale outages, we're aware. But when I think about people that are in areas with possible issues or challenges with getting, you know, cell service or communication challenges, and their power's out, and they're just maybe home alone and have no way to notify us, we'll actually know that, and we'll be able to get folks dispatched.
We'll be able to respond faster, understand size and scope, and then also the meters will actually tell us when they come back online, and so we'll know as we make our restoration activities what is and what isn't on. So we avoid the situation where one side of the street comes back on and it's significantly longer for the other side, or one part of the neighborhood's restored and not the other. We'll have that information.
Because right now we have to drive a truck and go down, and we have to drive a truck down the lines to see who's on, who's off during, like, especially major outages.
That's what we ask, to turn your porch lights on.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. We do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have.
I never knew that. You turn your porch light on?
Nobody would ever see it during a massive outage.
Oh, it's too far from the road.
Yeah.
So one of the other things is with the data that the customers will have, we also have the ability to project bill amounts. So you will be able to go in and see or receive notification of a threshold that you set that if your bill, it says, based on your current usage, your bill is estimated to be $180, for example. So you can set an alert, either text, email, and receive and say, if my projected bill reaches $100, please send me an alert. And that way you can take action during that billing cycle to reduce your month-end bill. So instead of opening the bill at the end of 30 days and getting a surprise, you'll actually be able to take action during that billing cycle to reduce the bill. I already talked about identifying ways to reduce power use. Also, with less vehicles on the road, we're reducing vehicle emissions and making a safer environment for our employees. The less time they're on people's property, the less trucks are on the road, the less likelihood of accidents. So,
confrontation.
There are customers that don't want us on their property, surprisingly enough, and so smart meters allow us to really honor that request. And once the meter's installed, we don't really have a need to go on site unless there's some sort of equipment failure.
My son was a meter reader for a while, and he had the Cape Junction deal, and it was, new industry out in that area, you don't go anywhere near those places, and then you can't read the meter, you just kind of got to either guesstimate at it, or they read it themselves and send in the card. They don't always do that because they don't care, and you go to try to pull the meter, you probably can't get on the property, but then when they're commodity is all done and harvested and they're gone, you go out there, there's nobody to send the bill to.
Right.
That's one of the fears that's been expressed, is that we're doing our installations during harvest. So we don't know what that's going to look like.
They curve.
It's not a new industry.
No, it's not.
No.
And I've been.
Yeah.
Newly legal.
Yeah. I like the way you phrase it, personally.
There you go.
Ryan worked, gosh, probably 7, 8, 10 years ago, and it was like that back then.
Yeah.
And there were just places you didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, my meter reader came by yesterday, so I had a nice chat with her. So.
That's good.
Anyhow, so with that though, you guys have been installing since January, so you have communities where you see some usage already.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got all the Willamette Valley, we're billing over 200,000 customers with over the smart meter network now.
Yeah.
So I'm on the equal pay. Mm-hmm. So I've done that 2 years in a row now. So it adjusted after 12 months to whatever it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that with my Avista and my PP&L. Have you noticed any changes with the smart meters going in? Because there is a concern that the word is that they overbill and that the frequency of the checking and all that kind of stuff that you guys would be able to see past billing compared to new billing on the installation. Has there been any changes or efficiencies noted or the opposite?
There have been some customers that have taken advantage of the technology to reduce usage.
Yeah,
but meters have to test to an accuracy standard. We talked about the ANSI standards. Meters have to perform and measure accurately. So whether it's a smart meter or an analog meter or a digital meter, they all have to measure the same and perform to accuracy standards. And so we're billing customers for what they're using. The meters are measuring it accurately.
Mm-hmm.
There are some customers in the Willamette Valley that are leveraging this to curtail usage and save some money because they're choosing to because they have the data. We've done a bunch of checks from a system consistency standpoint of, hey, when we get reads from the smart meter network, are they billing accurately in our systems? And yeah, we've done a number of checks there. We do them every time we send a bill out for a customer and haven't found any issues.
One of the problems, it's not a problem, it's an issue that I've had with Pacific Power and their billing is that as you approach towards Christmas, you short read the bill in November. And then long read it, it's usually,
access.
Yeah, because yeah. of vacations, you get the meter people on vacation.
We'll get behind
But ironically, every year, the bill that I get in January, which had all my Christmas lights on it, Christmas turkey and relatives and hot water heaters and whatnot, ironically, it happened to be 36 days, not 30 days. Well, that's a 20% overread on my meter, number one.
Yeah, we have that.
So I get all done with my Christmas shopping and I think, gosh, you know, my bill in first of December was peanuts. Well, now it all lumps onto 36 days.
Yeah.
And my question to Pacific Power and Light when I called in was, those 6 days should have been on my next bill at a lower rate.
Let me answer that. Because actually, on the residential rate schedule, we have tiers. So you use a certain, you're aware of
that. I should have fallen onto the next tier.
Well, no, because the longer the billing cycle, the more kilowatt hours you get at the lower tier. So you don't get 0 to 500 if it's a 36-day bill.
Mm-hmm.
You could get up to 800 kilowatt hours
under
the first tier.
So
when you look at
sliding scale,
tier it is longer based on the number of days in the billing cycle. So next time, unfortunately, I hope you don't get one, but if you do, check the amount of kilowatt hours that are billed on each tier, and you'll see that all the tiers are adjusted to accommodate that. Extra days of the billing cycle.
With smart meters, that delay in meter reading and those 36-day and big swings go away.
That'll be gone.
That's what I mean. It'll be on a 30-day cycle every month.
The months will vary. It's not exactly
30.
You're going to get, it will be far more consistent.
That'll be within about 10 minutes, as smart as this meter's supposed to be.
Yeah, so that is a good point that I want to have that.
The
I worked so hard on that tariff. Anyway, so do you want to go to the next slide?
Or Maddie.
Oh, are we there? Okay, I guess I've been looking at this too much. One of the things that Corey was talking that we're late adopters to the technology, and so when we looked at best practices of other utilities that have been installing these smart meters for the last, over 10 years, one of them was to have an opt-out program. Now, some of the early Duke Energy, Pacific Gas and Electric, San Diego Gas and Electric, Pepco, Xcel, they all installed smart meters for their customers without offering an opt-out program in advance. And one of the things that we did not want to do is we wanted to make sure that we had an opt-out program for customers who didn't want the technology on their house. And to this day, Duke and Xcel do not offer an opt-out at all for any of their millions of customers. You either get a smart meter or you get no meter. So we thought that was not going to be very, very accommodating to our customers and what we've heard from our customers. So what we did is we went ahead and, like I said, there are a couple fees. If you choose during deployment, if you notify the company that you don't want a smart meter, we will skip your home and you will retain the meter that is currently installed in your house, and as long as that meter is registering accurately. Okay. And at that point, there is a monthly meter reading fee that will kick in after the network is fully online, which is $36 a month. So there'll be a $36 a month meter reading fee.
Do you get so many kilowatt hours with that $36?
No, that's just a fee. That's a fee just to read the meter.
Why so high? I mean, California's is $10. And
our fee in California is $20, but yes, there's a much different regulatory environment in California is here. So for example, our California customers pay about 17 cents per kilowatt hour. We pay a significantly less amount in Oregon because Oregon is less inclined to socialize costs over the rate base as opposed to California, which is more inclined to socialize costs over, so everyone pays for everything.
So
it's subsidized.
It's subsidized.
I mean, $36 a month.
Well, yeah.
Like I said, meter reader came out yesterday. She's getting paid under the current cost. You're telling me it's $36 for that same person to drive to my house every single month.
Well, it's a different.
It doesn't cover cost of vehicle, fuel,
it does.
And time. $36.
It does. It's
times.
A loaded. Yeah, it does. I mean, when we calculated the rate, what we did is we took what it costs to go out and read a meter, not what it goes out to read 590,000, 600,000 meters a month. That cost obviously is going to be significantly less because we're doing it with fully staffed personnel and we have optimized meter reading routes. So for example, so it's much different when it's on a mass scale than it is if we're going out and we have, what I said, 1,900 meters to read in the state of Oregon. Those costs are going to increase significantly as we go out to read that meter. So what we ended up doing was taking where we'd gone out to read a meter, we took those costs, we took an average of the travel time, we took an average of the amount of time it takes to read a meter, which obviously is not very long, and we multiplied that by the loaded rate of that employee. And the loaded rate means that including their costs, labor, support, truck, vehicle, maintenance, and things like that. So that's where we got the $36.
What if a whole community opted out? I mean, we got 35,000 people in Grants Pass, another 11,000 mm-hmm. Cape Junction area. We got 85,000 in the county. What if the whole county opted out? Would it still be 36 per person?
At this point in time, that's the tariff rate, so that's what we would charge.
For how
per
long?
Meter.
I mean, at which point will you guys assess what the actual cost of doing that
good
if you
question.
Had such a large amount of people opt out?
Now, when we, that's a great question, because when we went in and we asked for these fees, one of the criteria was that we go back after the meters are installed, after we have the opt-out customers and we know who they are and what it is, and we have to submit a report to the commission to say these are what the costs are currently after all the meters are installed. So we will be, you know, looking at all of the costs, including the meter monthly meter reading fee, the meter exchange fees, and everything like that. So that is on our after we're substantially deployed. And a good example of that is Portland General, like we were talking about earlier, they did in like 2010. Their initial monthly meter reading fee was $50, and they went back in a few years later and recalculated, and it was lowered to $46 a month. Avista, which has gas RF meters in this community, their monthly meter reading fee is $50 a month if you want to opt out and get a non-RF meter. So yes, the $36 is based on cost. It's a cost-based fee, and yes, we're going to be relooking at that again after we know exactly where these customers are and, you know, what the
Do
actual
you have an
costs
idea
are.
What the rate for a meter reader is right now? I mean, before deploying any meters in the state, what that rate?
You mean
is.
The loaded the,
just the
just labor?
Just the wage or the fully loaded cost?
The fully loaded cost. It's like, what's there's 600,000 meters.
I think it's...
You know probably what
it is. I have it in my filing.
I'm trying to think of what it is per hour. I want to say...
36 is more, right? It should be somewhere around 25.
No, that's their wage. That's like their that's just their wage. The fully loaded cost would include...
$36 a month is what the...
Yeah, but they're...
That's the one-time fee for us to... That's the monthly fee for us to...
But the loaded cost is probably around $50 to $80 an hour. But we're not charging people...
Take an hour. What does it cost right now for you to look at all of the meters in the state?
Oh, I'm sorry. Currently, with a fully optimized route...
Yeah, I'll do the math. Just, what is it?
As far as what we pay now with non-AMI to read meters each month.
Right. What is it?
And I don't have that data, but it's probably around $1.
So when you reduce the number of meters,
mm-hmm.
so from 600 down to...
1900.
Mm-hmm. That's going to cost, take it to $36
yes.
dollars a month.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Because you figure that meter reader is going to now, instead of walking house to house, okay. he's going to go make a dead drive from here or somewhere.
I get it.
Yeah, that was why we had to really look and see, you know, when we first proposed the fee, it was, well, how are we going to come up with this? Because, yeah, that was something we initially struggled with, was what's...
You only spend $600,000 a month on average to go read meters?
On a regular meter reading route? For regular routes, yeah, it's about... I think it's about... Now, there's other reads. There's
same
open
way.
And close reads.
Mm-hmm.
It's a couple... If you look at open and close reads, if you look at off-cycle reads...
We need to go back
reads.
And look. I don't remember. I've looked at too many numbers.
That's
with deployment
pretty important
stuff.
Number.
Yeah, mm-hmm. agreed. So we'll take a note and get back to you on the actual cost.
The key point of this question is, mm-hmm. is it just efficient for Pacific Power? If it's $600,000 and you're already covering your costs right now with current subscribers, what is the appreciation to the subscribers who do opt in to the smart meter? What's the benefit to them? If should they see a standard reduction on their bill of $1?
It's covered right now. Why? Yeah,
yeah that's a good question.
Is that just a profit that goes to Pacific Power?
No, we don't make profit on operational costs. We don't. The way our rates are structured, an operational cost is a pass-through. So when we file our rate case, we have to submit what our operational costs are. And so when we file our next...
We write a lot into operational costs because we're also the governing body. We don't govern you guys.
Right.
But we do govern solid waste agencies, and
sure.
they're similar in that style.
So you...
They
okay.
can write in their operational costs to be pretty much anything they want. And I know the PUC governs that. We govern what we consider what
right. because a public utility, you're audited every year, aren't you?
We're not only are we audited, we're held to, we use an accounting that's recognized by FERC. So we use FERC level accounting, which drills down to each category of what those operational
yeah,
costs are.
And actual activities, like the employees.
And actual activities.
FERC
so,
accounting is very detailed.
But to continue
so
on with what we're talking.
Squirrel a bunch of things away into operational costs isn't
no.
possible
it's
with FERC accounting. Well, I mean, it's... It'd be illegal, right? It'd be violating
yeah,
our accounting rules.
People get fired
I mean,
for that.
That would be, that'd be a problem.
No, our books are completely transparent.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and like I said, they go down to anything, you know, the nuts and bolts on a, to install a transmission system. But to go back to what you were saying, so on the next, when we file our next rate case, any savings that we've realized, you know, from the reduction and will be represented as a reduction in operational costs. And this is one of the tools that we're trying to use to at least keep rates flat and prevent them from going up. I mean, there obviously are other things on rate pressures and with operations that impact rate, like fuel costs, like labor agreements, you know, there's a lot of factors that are fluctuating that do change. But this is our hope is to reduce or at least as our way to keep rate pressure off.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and then the other fee I want to talk about is the $169. Now, if you move into a place and you have a smart meter installed, then the $169 is a one-time fee for us to go out, remove the smart meter, and install a digital non-radio frequency meter. So that cost, but it only applies if you move in and you have a smart meter.
And that's what we have right now, digital non-radio frequency meters.
We have a lot of different meters. We have analog meters, we have digital meters, we, you know. But
we have
but
one
then,
way.
But then when you do that, if you get your regular meter back, then you go on to the $169 plus.
Then you'll go on your manual read.
And then you're on to the $36
yep.
a month.
Correct.
I'm just looking at 10 houses in a row in my neighborhood. A guy blows through there and 10 minutes maybe, 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and he's going to knock back $360 per month. But the third time that he has to go out in the county, and it takes him an hour to read 5 meters.
Yeah.
So I'm going to guess it's all advertised backwards.
It's an average, exactly. It's an average. So it includes a 5 minute meter travel time and a 20 minute travel time. You know what I mean? So when we get that average, that's where we came up with an amount of time.
Would there be any push going forward? And in the towns that you've done this to, in the cities that you've done this to, that you don't have a meter at every house. You have a meter farm at the end of the block. There's a really, really big concern about meters, and you know, my neighbor's meter is looking right into my kitchen window, and I don't like that because of whatever, you know, the concerns about radiation and so on and so forth. So move it all down to the end of the block and have a meter farm for a whole subdivision, to where
people,
all the meters are in one spot. They're away from the home. You're not putting at risk anybody out in this neighborhood of 26 homes. It's a planned unit development or whatever, and you have a meter farm like they have mailbox farms.
Right.
And have basically the same thing. Have you done that anywhere at all?
Well, we do have that. I mean, we serve on the Columbia River. No, we serve on the Columbia River, where on the bank there is a meter box, and it includes all of the meters for the individual slips. So if a community wanted to get together, rewire, and have a line going up, because we only own two of the meter bays.
Yeah,
so if they want to rewire and have a meter bank, and then we go plug in the meters.
I'm talking moving forward, not taking a neighborhood and say I'm going to rewire the whole neighborhood, because that.
But it would be on that. Would be on their.
But on the developer, can the developer call and say, I'm going to wire all these houses to a meter farm at the end of the block?
If it meets the electrical service requirements of the county,
The county and NEC standards, There's nothing.
You would have to meet standards.
That would prevent.
I just wonder if
we wouldn't have any issues.
I just wonder if that, you know, because you've got objections you need to feel.
There's local planning about how far away the meter is from the line, or that, you know, where the house and stuff like that. But if it was wired in a way that.
Yeah. You may have to bring a higher voltage in, depending on the length of line. I mean, that.
Depends how far it runs.
That's up to an electrician.
Absolutely.
And your electrical engineer that's not designing the plat. But I just wonder if you've been done anywhere.
You know, that's the first time I heard
that.
You have an objection there, and I was wondering if you had any ideas to feel that objection. People say, well, that meter's not on the side of my house. I'm a smart meter all the way, saving myself $36, but I don't want it outside my bedroom window.
We also have people who,
and not made necessarily for smart meters, but they live on property, they don't want us on the property, and they relocate their meter base to the street.
Yeah.
You know, so they don't want us to go behind their gated community, their property, so they relocate it there. Mm-hmm. And that happens a lot too. Mm-hmm.
Could you do that at a transformer? Your ground mounted transformers, or you feed 4 or 5 houses? Could you, if you're going to put a ground mount transformer, and say on the side of that transformer, we're going to have 6 meters because it feeds all 6 houses on this thing, and it's away from the houses, short lengths of double aught or whatever that you're
right. So you'd have to have the line from the transformer and then the individual service drops from each meter servicing that home.
But you still have to go from the transformer to the
house.
Yeah,
we can go overhead, overground, whatever.
Okay. Yeah. Just wondering. I'm just thinking out loud.
Yeah, I think there's some creative ways to moving forward in new developments to address some of those.
People
absolutely
have choices.
So the biggest concern, I mean, on that note that we're hearing is obviously the health implications, the radio frequency waves, the levels higher than China and Russia approved, which they're not really known for having the most health conscious environments, you know, around the world. You know, we talked about, you know, phone should be on airplane mode, so you're not getting the radio frequency. But some people with pacemakers and such, they can't be around microwaves. So you have something on the side of the house that's constantly sending a radio wave. There's medical reports. We were given some American Academy of Environmental Medicine that was concerned about the effects on children, on reproductive health, various things like that. So where, I guess for me, you watch enough TV, you see commercials that tell about every medicine that's going to fix you, and then the 3 minutes of the commercial is actually all the side effects, And, you know, the best is when they all say death, you know, and you're like, oh, I want to take that. Anyhow, it's kind of one of those things that we're hearing from all over the concerns about the health involved. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm kind of waiting for the commercial portion that has the...
all the disclaimers.
Exactly.
If I could interrupt, Commissioner, I have to leave that in exactly 1 minute. I have to be across the river at Public Works at 4 o'clock. So you can take over for me, and I think I've asked my questions
okay.
that I had.
We're gonna send this along and any responses to questions that you have that we weren't able to address today too. So if you have more questions, please feel free to let us know.
I would suggest for these kinds of presentations to governing bodies who don't have jurisdiction or authority is that you start with who does have jurisdiction and authority in your presentation. So that there's
a disclosure
to the public and anybody else who sees this.
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it really is. I mean, you guys, this is outside of your span of control. This is really a utility.
It's information for us because we're going to get asked a question.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Y'all are going to go home, and we're here tomorrow morning.
Oh, we get asked questions too.
Well, that's your job.
It is our job.
Yeah. And that's why I'm here.
Yeah,
it's really state representatives, senators.
My apologies to the governor.
So, and any kind of public, you know, challenge, this is not new. We get this on a whole host of different things. But like we just did a solid waste agency increase in the recycle. As a result of the recycle market, the rates have gone up by, did you guys do 6%?
6.1%.
We do have authority over that. We can say, nope, you're going to have to eat it, or don't do that.
Right.
You're not going to provide that service anymore. That's the example of where we do have authority. Right. Public input to us is totally appropriate. But when it gets construed that we do have some, it's really segregated wheelhouse of like, that's a state representative's responsibility. Mm-hmm. That's a state senator's responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we should be keenly aware of, we don't get into their territory. We step back and are citizens just like everybody else. We want to call Carl Wilson and Herman Beertrigger, our local people, and say, that's a governor's PUC. You know, that's the chain of command for that.
So. Yeah, that's really good feedback.
It's very helpful.
We don't want to come in as an adversarial, but we do want to say, we want to do as folks that are listening, make sure that it's clear that that this is information for you guys in a discussion. But like you said, at the end of the day, you don't have jurisdiction over over what we do, and that's really an Oregon State Utility Commission ruling and decision. Mm-hmm. That's great feedback. I think we can incorporate that. To not come off as adversarial, like we don't care what you guys are saying. We're just kind of here to do this, but this is an informative discussion. And kind of laying the ground rules.
And you guys are going to be doing some town halls, or is it already done? I mean, how is that?
So if I could dovetail into that, so that's been actually one of the best benefits from this experience, which has been that we've had the opportunity now to connect with our customers in more of a grassroots fashion. We've kind of made the rounds, and we're continuing to do so throughout the week. And this Saturday, we'll have our first workshop, which will be in the Jackson County Expo. It'll be for a few hours, and it'll just be open forum so that people can come in and just ask questions and see the technology themselves and try testing some, you know, with some meters and all kinds of stuff. So hopefully that'll help some folks with any concerns that they may have or questions. And then we'll also have one here in Josephine County on the 22nd at the fairgrounds. Again, we chose kind of like what feels like a neutral place. We don't... you know, we're a little bashed, I think, around just the realization that, you know, folks like such as yourselves have had to try to field, you know, questions around this stuff where you it really isn't in your wheelhouse, right? So we're trying to do a better job at getting out and giving the information and being approachable and answering those questions, because the last thing we want is our customers to be afraid of us. But that said, they've also given us wonderful feedback that we've actually been taking back to Portland and to the commission to make adjustments, such as the waiver of the initial fees. So we are doing what we can. We aren't the most nimble, but we're trying. So.
Well, and it is, I mean, similar to what Commissioner Hare was saying, I mean, we have been asked by various groups to do what some of the other communities, cities, and counties have done of saying either pass a resolution, pass a some kind of proclamation of sorts, either calling out on the fee as exorbitant or punitive of sorts, or flat out just saying we don't agree with this being allowed in our community. But do those have any effect? They don't mean anything, do they?
No, it's kind of likened to showing your community that you heard them, but it doesn't have any effect.
I'm not real big into lip service either. That's
essentially.
Right.
And we've had some communities do that without even asking us anything about the technology. They actually wrote those letters.
You're not barking up the appropriate tree.
Yeah.
Right.
It's misleading to the public.
Yeah, the utility commission, that's the right venue to give feedback to.
For what?
Yeah.
Right.
You were just talking to the wrong people.
Yeah, it's misleading. Correct.
I would say that there is a historic national campaign. One of the largest costs of providing electricity is obviously the generation. And so if you can curb that, and by not having, putting a peak use surcharge, I worked with electric cooperatives back in DC at the national level. The FERC chair, Neil Chatterjee, is a friend of mine. I understand this. And that's a huge cost, especially when society's saying, I don't want you to go and do coal, so don't put any more of those coal-fired facilities because those are bad. You know, they're cheap. They're really cheap, relatively speaking. So that's fine, society. Don't worry about it. We'll find some other means of providing you electricity. We'll sell the coal to China, and you can still breathe that air and have the CO2 going into the environment. It's just displaced. But you guys are all going to pay 5 cents more a kilowatt hour because you don't want to burn coal in the most regulated country for emissions. That's fine, but you're going to have to pay a peak use surcharge if you're going to be turning up your AC at the peak time when the wind doesn't blow. And that's what you've hitched your wagon to, is that
windmill.
A windmill or a solar panel somewhere when it's cloudy in Oregon. Those are the, so tying those together, it's not always the funnest conversation. Totally isn't. But people don't necessarily understand that every electron that we're using right now is being generated somewhere.
It takes money to make
yes.
it.
There's no storage in our capacity.
Correct.
Not yet, but yeah.
Yeah, Alaska's the only place that I'm aware of right now that's got a major battery storage component, and it was tied to a mill. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the same thing.
Yep.
Another thing that you guys might want to do is talk about the other elements in your industry. Mm-hmm. So you've got cooperatives or your counterpart and municipals. Mm-hmm. Are they doing something similar so that it's not just the big bad investor-owned utilities? And I'm not trying to carry water for you. You might find that
that's good feedback.
Cooperatives are not.
Right.
Why aren't they? Or that all municipalities already have this system in because it just makes sense. Or they're not doing it because their cost of reading a meter is so much less than people like investor-owns who are having not just the cooperative typical rural area, but you also have the cities. And that's what I see your distribution territory looking like here.
Right.
Cooperatives probably are the first people to try to get onto some sort of a efficient, you don't have to have people running down 2 mile long driveways to check a meter every month. So that might be.
Yeah, we have looked at other utilities.
Good. We can include E-Web. That in.
Yeah. E-Web is one right now that they're installing smart meters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good feedback because it's kind of
Ted
a comparison, not just.
My legislative director when I was in D.C. So you can take the kid out of co-op country, but you can't take the co-op out of them.
So. Well, and I know we got to let you guys finish. I think part of the concern that from the folks we're hearing is that, okay, right now you're not monitoring what people's usage is, but as there is a push for sustainable energy or for being green or the carbon emissions in the coal, whatever stuff is coming, cap and trade, that there's going to be a pushback that people's stuff is turned off if there's high usage, or there is a pushback of, oh no, we need to be this, so we're going to pull away from, you're going to pay more, but we're going to give you less. And, the one other thing that has been feedback is just to have you address, and we didn't quite keep the health effects wasn't answered, but the other part of it was that you're using the customer's actual electricity to send the information. So they're actually, you're using their electricity and then billing them for the electricity used to send the radio waves.
No, it doesn't work that way.
Let's address the questions in order, though.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the health first and really talk about, what sources we went through to verify and make sure that we felt that they were safe, and then also the testing and everything around that first.
So from an RF standpoint, right, how we communicate, because we're building out an RF mesh network, communicates at 900 megahertz frequency, the same thing that, similar to Wi-Fi routers, baby monitors, lots of consumer appliances, communicate in that unlicensed bandwidth. It's a 1 watt radio. We're currently, the maximum output of one of those smart meters is 1.6% of an FCC exposure limit. Now there's a bunch of debates around, is that a good exposure limit or not? That's mm-hmm. kind of like your guys' comment of, that's not really our jurisdiction of what the FCC has set for exposure and what is permissible or not. That's the FCC laws, that's the requirements mm-hmm. now. The maximum from a smart meter doesn't talk all the time. An average duty cycle of a smart meter is 45 seconds a day. A high-end maximum one that talks the most, that would, because we're building a mesh network, and so there's your meter may pass through, your data may pass through several other meters to get back to us. The most talkative high-duty one talks for less than an hour a day. And so that high-duty one is at 1.6% of an FCC RF exposure limit. And then one of the things with RF exposure is the farther you get away, the less exposure it is. So by the square of the distance, the exposure reduces. So if you took a measurement at the meter, physically touching it, and it was the 1.6%, once you step back 3 feet, that exposure is exponentially reduced. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost zero from a reading standpoint, an exposure standpoint, from 3 feet of distance. So that's kind of from an RF exposure at a super high level.
Is there any cumulative of people, you said it refers from, you know, a meter way out to probably getting closer to a source where it gets online or whatever. So people in the most rural, there's no referral to their meter to convey because they're all the way out, right, at the end of the distribution territory.
We're
so the concentration of the distribution territory, is that where the meters that are utilizing, you know, the higher referring more over time?
Not necessarily. Because if you're really close to your neighbors, you're only going to talk every so often just to pass my data off to Christina that'll go to you, that'll go back to PacifiCorp. It'll be the rural customers may be the opposite because they have to either talk more frequently to get a neighbor or they have to send a signal a longer distance and they'll send it more frequently. So it may be actually the opposite because they have to send, because the radios can actually modulate how strong they send the signal. And so if I only need to talk really quietly to get to Christina, I may only talk at a quarter of a watt, where if I'm at the 1 watt maximum, which is the FCC maximum wattage for one of the in that spectrum, I may have to communicate at the full 1 watt in a rural area to get my signal out the quarter mile, the half mile, whatever it is to get to a neighbor, to get to some other communication equipment.
So I'm curious about that. So we struggle with our region with the mountains. So putting MDTs in the patrol cars, half the time they don't communicate because of the mountainous blockage and stuff like that. And we use radio towers to get over the mountain for the radios for our network in the county to get over to the Illinois Valley and such like that. But I mean, have you already, as it is, radio frequency is difficult in our area. Mm-hmm. How does that work with your network when you have such a rural spread out area? Mm-hmm. Are you having to boost the signals in other ways to get responses?
No. So part of the infrastructure is there are some pole-mounted devices that are kind of the takeout points for our infrastructure. And so the devices that are up on poles give us that elevation to cover those distances and get data out. Where you've got towers kind of going over mountains, we'll use devices on poles to typically go around areas or come in and out of valleys.
But having said that, because of the rural nature of some of our service territory, there will be customers that we will not be able to build a network out to. Mm-hmm. And so they would keep whatever meter they have, but they wouldn't be paying a $36 month fee because if we can't build a network out to your house, that's our problem, that's not a choice that the customer's making. So
it'd be interesting to see about the other things that are happening out there, either mm-hmm. in that frequency or others. I know that they're looking at providing internet coverage, starting in the Illinois Valley and working in the Williams Valley, and it's got these satellite dishes up on people's trees or roofs or something like that. And I don't know what impacts that's had, and I'm sure it's probably regulated. But
I think they're at a different spectrum, they're at a higher frequency, so that we kind of get through some of that, or they're at a way lower frequency to cover distance and reduce speed.
Right.
But yeah, there's...
What I think some people are looking at is this element of what's going on, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on.
We live in an RF immersed environment. There really, right. I mean, there's, I looked outside, there was like she's 9 Wi-Fi networks at the front door of the building.
Talking about, you know, the radios that the dispatch and sheriff's office are having to use.
Yeah.
They're going. Probably pretty powerful. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure you're on a licensed spectrum that's probably kicking out 5 or 6 watts.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Well, in the city, when we were on analog, the city network could go out into the county a little bit and you could hear it. When they switch to digital, you get to not even out of their area and you get this warbled something that doesn't quite work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sheriff's still operating off of analog just to make sure that we're...
Both.
Yeah. We're essentially walking through it.
We bought the digital network, but they found the other worked better.
Yeah.
But,
and certain, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there were 3 questions. So another.
Oh, the other one. So like, did we talk enough about kind of the RF enough? Is that?
I don't know that conversation.
I guess there was a.
Yeah,
question.
I don't know if it is. I mean, it's there's some, FCC
point.
Is kind of the governing body. We're at 1.6 of the FCC exposure limits. I think there's some debates on whether that's a good limit or not. I don't know if that's necessarily again our jurisdiction either.
Mm-hmm.
But so that's kind of the health and safety. You mentioned the powering of the meter.
Mm-hmm.
And
customers
are paying for
that. I feel like we're not done with health and safety, though, if you don't mind. Are you done?
I am.
Well, I just wanted to kind of make sure to touch on ionizing frequency as well as.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
That there haven't been any known class.
Yeah, so it is a non-ionizing radio frequency as opposed to, you hear a lot about radiation, X-rays, those are all ionizing. There's a scale on the radio frequency, you know, and ionizing is known to alter cells. And I think a lot of information, you know, we live in an information age where you can go out and Google and get pretty much whatever support, whatever position you have. So there's a lot of information out there that may or may not be accurate. So, and I see a lot of it kind of convoluted, mixed in together.
Yeah.
The challenge that I have is that I'm running up against another appointment.
Oh,
okay, I'm sorry. We are
no, my bad.
Okay. The last one I think was really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
one. So the way the meter works is to power the meter to send this communications out. That's taken from the line side coming in, and then customer generation is calculated afterwards. So all of that actual usage to operate the meter is taken from our side, and then what customer actually uses is calculated after.
Okay.
So meter operation is well before. So none of that is passed off to the customer.
Yeah.
So again, when is your guys' town hall presentation? It seemed like it was towards the
so
end.
We have
September
a workshop 22nd. On September 22nd in Josephine County. We
time.
Have several
11 to 1. 11 to 2, 11 to
we'll
1.
We'll even have food trucks, food. Yeah, it should be pretty open and comfortable for people. And then we have a whole notification process. We did receive some feedback from people who are saying that they didn't receive any type of notification. So if you hear that people are experiencing that, please have them reach out to even me personally.
Did it
time.
Go like in their bill or something?
Well, no, actually, we've been sending out
postcards,
letters, and
making a phone call.
Phone calls. We're
when
trying
I'm
to
seeing a bunch of mail
the only
come
reason
back.
I wonder is like if you put it in their bill and they paid their bill and they said,
oh,
I
no.
didn't get it,
it's
kind of like when we send stuff out with their tax bill, but they paid their tax bill. It's like, I don't know how it happens that both happens, but if you send out a separate mailer, and
when
there's no
separate,
like recall,
like.
You know, a response or something like that.
Right.
Like, did it happen or didn't it happen?
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to figure out.
Okay.
And I honestly don't know that I ever open anything from PPNL because I pay my bill online.
Mm-hmm.
There's that.
There's that.
There's a difference between
people
and
getting
no,
and
even worse. I have it on auto pay.
Because you've got.
I don't even log in anymore.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Once I put it on, every month the same, and it pays.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't even look.
I don't
the
either.
Exact same way with. I live in PGE territory. I'm the exact same way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll leave cards for follow-up questions
yep.
and comments.
Anything you need.
Really appreciate your time.
Thank
yeah.
you. And
yeah,
if anybody here has questions for us, we're happy to talk to them outside.
Yeah.
Well, you can even, we can leave and you can have the room.
Okay.
All right, so we are adjourned at 4:03 p.m.
Okay.